Page 75. Chapter 9. For the first time in 3 nights, Okonkwor slept. He woke up once in the middle of the night, and his mind went back to the past 3 days without making him feel uneasy. He began to wonder why he had felt uneasy at all. It was like a man wondering in broad daylight why a dream had appeared so terrible to him at night. He stretched himself and scratched his thigh where a mosquito had bitten him as he slept. Another one was wailing near his right ear. He slapped the ear and hoped he had killed it. Why do they always go for one's ears? When he was a child, his mother had told him a story about it, but it was as silly as all women's stories. Mosquito, she had said, had asked Ear to marry him, whereupon Ear fell on the floor in uncontrollable laughter. "How much longer do you think you will live?" she asked. "You are already a skeleton." Mosquito went away humiliated, and any time he passed her way, he told Ear that he was still alive. Okonkwor turned on his side and went back to sleep. He was roused in the morning by someone banging on his door. "Who is that?" he growled. He knew it must be Ekwefi. Page 76. Of his 3 wives, Ekwefi was the only one who would have the audacity to bang on his door. "Izin Ma is dying," came her voice, and all the tragedy and sorrow of her life were packed in those words. Okonkwor sprang from his bed, pushed back the bolt on his door, and ran into Ekwefi's hut. Izin Ma lay shivering on a mat beside a huge fire that her mother had kept burning all night. "It is Iba," said Okonkwor, as he took his machete and went into the bush to collect the leaves and grasses and barks of trees that went into making medicine, the medicine for Iba. Ekwefi knelt beside the sick child, occasionally feeling with her palm the wet, burning forehead. Izin Ma was an only child and the center of her mother's world. Very often, it was Izin Ma who decided what food her mother should prepare. Ekwefi even gave her such delicacies as eggs, which children were rarely allowed to eat because such food tempted them to steal. One day, as Izin Ma was eating an egg, Okonkwor had come in unexpectedly from his hut. He was greatly shocked and swore to beat Ekwefi if she dared to give the child eggs again. But it was impossible to refuse Izin Ma anything. After her father's rebuke, she developed an even keener appetite for eggs, and she enjoyed, above all, the secrecy in which she now ate them. Her mother always took her into their bedroom and shut the door. Izin Ma did not call her mother Ne like all children. She called her by her name, Ekwefi, as her father and other grown-up people did. The relationship between them was not only that of mother and child. Page 77. There was something in it like the companionship of equals, which was strengthened by such little conspiracies as eating eggs in the bedroom. Ekwefi had suffered a good deal in her life. She had borne 10 children, and 9 of them had died in infancy, usually before the age of 3. As she buried one child after another, her sorrow gave way to despair, and then to grim resignation. The birth of her children, which should be a woman's crowning glory, became, for Ekwefi, mere physical agony devoid of promise. The naming ceremony after 7 market weeks became an empty ritual. Her deepening despair found expression in the names she gave her children. One of them was a pathetic cry, "Onwumbiko," "Death, I implore you." But death took no notice. Onwumbiko died in his 15th month. The next child was a girl, Ozoimena, "May it not happen again." She died in her 11th month, and 2 others after her. Ekwefi then became defiant and called her next child Onwuma, "Death may please himself," and he did. After the death of Ekwefi's 2nd child, Okonkwor had gone to a medicine man, who was also a diviner, of the Afa oracle, to inquire what was amiss. This man told him that the child was an Ogbanje, one of those wicked children who, when they died, entered their mother's wombs to be born again. When your wife becomes pregnant again, he said, let her not sleep in her hut. Let her go and stay with her people. In that way, she would elude her wicked tormentor and break its evil cycle of birth and death. Ecuefi did as she was asked. As soon as she became pregnant, she went to live with her old mother in another village. It was there that her third child was born and circumcised on the eighth day. Page 78. She did not return to Okonkwo's compound until 3 days before the naming ceremony. The child was called Onwumbiko. Onwumbiko was not given proper burial when he died. Okonkwo had called in another medicine man who was famous in the clan for his great knowledge about Ogbanje children. His name was Okagbwe Uyanwa. Okagbwe was a very striking figure, tall, with a full beard and a bald head. He was light in complexion, and his eyes were red and fiery. He always gnashed his teeth as he listened to those who came to consult him. He asked Okonkwo a few questions about the dead child. All the neighbors and relations who had come to mourn gathered round them. On what market day was it born? He asked. Oye, replied Okonkwo. And it died this morning? Okonkwo said yes, and only then realized for the first time that the child had died on the same market day as it had been born. The neighbors and relations also saw the coincidence and said among themselves that it was very significant. Where do you sleep with your wife? In your obi or in her own hut? Asked the medicine man. In her hut. In future, call her into your obi. The medicine man then ordered that there should be no mourning for the dead child. He brought out a sharp razor from the goatskin bag slung from his left shoulder and began to mutilate the child. Then he took it away to bury in the evil forest, holding it by the ankle and dragging it on the ground behind him. Page 79. After such treatment, it would think twice before coming again, unless it was one of the stubborn ones who returned, carrying the stamp of their mutilation, a missing finger, or perhaps a dark line where the medicine man's razor had cut them. By the time Onwumbiko died, Ekwefi had become a very bitter woman. Her husband's first wife had already borne 3 sons, all strong and healthy. When she had borne her third son in succession, Okonkwo had slaughtered a goat for her, as was the custom. Ekwefi had nothing but good wishes for her, but she had grown so bitter about her own chi that she could not rejoice with others over their good fortune. And so, on the day that Woye's mother celebrated the birth of her 3 sons with feasting and music, Ekwefi was the only person in the happy company who went about with a cloud on her brow. Her husband's wife took this for malevolence, as husbands' wives were wont to. How could she know that Ekwefi's bitterness did not flow outwards towards others, but inwards into her own soul, that she did not blame others for their good fortune, but her own evil chi, who denied her any? At last, Izin Ma was born, and although ailing, she seemed determined to live. At first, Ekwefi accepted her as she had accepted others, with listless resignation. But when she lived on to her 4th, 5th, and 6th years, love returned once more to her mother, and with love, anxiety. She determined to nurse her child to health, and she put all her being into it. She was rewarded by occasional spells of health, during which Izin Ma bubbled with energy like fresh palm wine. At such times she seemed beyond danger, but all of a sudden she would go down again. Page 80. Everybody knew she was an Ogbanje. These sudden bouts of sickness and health were typical of her kind. But she had lived so long that perhaps she had decided to stay. Some of them did become tired of their evil rounds of birth and death, or took pity on their mothers and stayed. Ekwefi believed deep inside her that Izin Ma had come to stay. She believed because it was that faith alone that gave her own life any kind of meaning. And this faith had been strengthened when a year or so ago, a medicine man had dug up Ezin Ma's Iiwa. Everyone knew then that she would live because her bond with the world of Ogbanje had been broken. Ekwefi was reassured. But such was her anxiety for her daughter that she could not rid herself completely of her fear. And although she believed that the Iiwa which had been dug up was genuine, she could not ignore the fact that some really evil children sometimes misled people into digging up a specious one. But Ezin Ma's Iiwa had looked real enough. It was a smooth pebble wrapped in a dirty rag. The man who dug it up was the same Okagbue who was famous in all the clan for his knowledge in these matters. Ezin Ma had not wanted to cooperate with him at first, but that was only to be expected. No Ogbanje would yield her secrets easily, and most of them never did, because they died too young, before they could be asked questions. "Where did you bury your Iiwa, Okagbue?" asked Ezin Ma. She was 9 then, and was just recovering from a serious illness. "What is Iiwa?" she asked in return. Page 81. "You know what it is. You buried it in the ground somewhere, so that you can die and return again to torment your mother." Ezin Ma looked at her mother, whose eyes, sad and pleading, were fixed on her. "Answer the question at once," roared Okonkwo, who stood beside her. All the family were there, and some of the neighbors, too. "Leave her to me," the medicine man told Okonkwo in a cool, confident voice. He turned again to Ezin Ma. "Where did you bury your Iiwa?" "Where they bury children," she replied, and the quiet spectators murmured to themselves. "Come along, then, and show me the spot," said the medicine man. The crowd set out, with Ezin Ma leading the way and Okagbue following closely behind her. Okonkwo next came, and Ekwefi followed him. When she came to the main road, Ezin Ma turned left as if she was going to the stream. "But you said it was where they bury children," asked the medicine man. "No," said Ezin Ma, whose feeling of importance was manifest in her sprightly walk. She sometimes broke into a run and stopped again suddenly. The crowd followed her silently. Women and children, returning from the stream with pots of water on their heads, wondered what was happening until they saw Okagbue and guessed that it must be something to do with Ogbanje. And they all knew Ekwefi and her daughter very well. Page 82. When she got to the big Udala tree, Ezin Ma turned left into the bush, and the crowd followed her. Because of her size, she made her way through trees and creepers more quickly than her followers. The bush was alive with the tread of feet on dry leaves and sticks, and the moving aside of tree branches. Ezin Ma went deeper and deeper, and the crowd went with her. Then she suddenly turned round and began to walk back to the road. Everybody stood to let her pass, and then filed after her. "If you bring us all this way for nothing, I shall beat sense into you," Okonkwo threatened. "I have told you to let her alone. I know how to deal with them," said Okagbue. Ezin Ma led the way back to the road, looked left and right, and turned right. And so they arrived home again. "Where did you bury your Iiwa?" asked Okagbue, when Ezin Ma finally stopped outside her father's obi. Okagbue's voice was unchanged. It was quiet and confident. "It is near that orange tree," Ezin Ma said. "And why did you not say so, you wicked daughter of Akalogoli?" Okonkwo swore furiously. The medicine man ignored him. "Come and show me the exact spot," he said quietly to Ezin Ma. "It is here," she said when they got to the tree. "Point at the spot with your finger," said Okagbue. "It is here," said Ezin Ma, touching the ground with her finger. Okonkwo stood by, rumbling like thunder in the rainy season. Page 83. "Bring me a hoe," said Okagbue. when Equifi brought the hoe, he had already put aside his goatskin bag.